Okay. We are, Bezrat Hashem, whatever it takes, by 10:30 today, we are finishing our discussion of Perek Chet, and next week we move on to Perek Tet. We've overstayed our welcome in this little part of Sefer Yeshua. But there's one last issue that we have yet to discuss, and it's really, in my opinion, the most significant and the most important issue, and that is why Shechem and why now? This whole ceremony of taking Bnei Yisrael up to the city of Shechem, engaging in some kind of reenactment or public declaration of the blessings and curses of Brachot HaKlalot, what I tried to show last week was that that ceremony, that notion of the public reading of the blessings and curses, is something which goes all the way back to Marmar HaSinai, and that at least according to one opinion, at Marmar HaSinai, even before the Aseret HaDibrot, what we were shown was the blessings and curses of Pashat B'chukotai. So there, that's Sefer HaBrit that we talked about last week. So there's there's certainly a sense that all of Bnei Yisrael are coming together to reenact in some way the acceptance of the Torah, Mamad HaSinai again, and we talked about the fact that on the face of it, it's simply we stood at Sinai and we accepted the Torah.
Sorry, I just realized Jack is in Chicago. It bothered me because I speak to her all the time. She's in Chicago coming back today.
Fair enough.
I just realized it. It was bothering me because I called her last night. Sorry.
That's okay. So we have this reenactment of Marmar HaSinai certainly at Sinai, and then again in Arvot Moav before Moshe dies, we do it again, and then 2 weeks later we cross over the Yarden and we go up to Shechem, and we do it again. So what's going on here? Why do we have to do this ceremony so many times, and why of all places in the city of Shechem? So, in truth, you have there's a handout over there. If you don't mind, just pass it down.
That's a new one.
That's a new one. So there's several issues. I have an intuitive sense that part of the question of why this happens is somehow related to the question of when this happens. And what I mean by when is that there's an interesting machloket in the Farshim as to the chronological sequence of events. When does Yeshua take the people up to Shechem in the midst of all of this battle? Is it happening here, right after they finish with Ai, they go up to Shechem and then come back to Gilgal and then deal with the rest of it? Or is this story somehow out of place chronologically? Is it happening earlier? Is it happening later? And it's simply placed here because geographically, Ai and Shechem are connected to each other. I'm not quite sure why it would be here, but what is the chronology and sequence of events? And interesting, there are three opinions because there's three possibilities. The simplest opinion, of course, is that everything's in chronological sequence. We go from Gilgal to Ai, from Ai to Shechem, and from Shechem we go on to wherever else we need to do. The other two opinions, one is in the sources that you have now, one is in the Tosefta. In the Tosefta, it says, "Bo re'e kamen nisim nasu liYisrael ba'oto hayom." How many miracles happened to Israel the day they crossed over the Yarden? Ba'oto hayom avru meha Yarden. That day they crossed over the Jordan. Ubao el Har Grizim ve'al Har Eval shebeshomron, and they arrive at Har Grizim and Har Eval that day near Shechem, which is a distance of 60 mil, says the Tosefta. And lo amad ish bifnehem, and they were able to go from Gilgal up to Shechem without any objection. Nobody stood in their way. That's a very interesting opinion. That essentially says that the whole story of the Battle of Yericho and the Battle of Ai chronologically is out of order. That they go up to Shechem first. They cross over the Yarden. They take their stones. They go up to Shechem. They set the stones in place. Then they come back to Gilgal. and they engage Yericho and then Ai. That's the first opinion. And the logic of the logic to that thesis is that part of what they do in Shechem is set these stones. Remember the stones that they put in place, and they write on the stones the words of the Torah? The Torah's mitzvah commandment is that you, the day you cross over the Yard, then you'll take these stones and take them up to Shechem and write the Torah there. So the assumption is if Yeshua does exactly what the Torah says to do, if I read it on the face of it, it says that you have to cross over the Yard on that day. You have to take the stones and set them in place that day. If he does it that day, then the meaning of this ceremony is essentially somehow connected to the notion of the crossing over the Yarden or the Battle of Yericho. Which, if it's a prelude to the Battle of Yericho, remember that Yericho to Yehoshua represents the center of the idolatry of Baal, the idolatry of Canaan. So before I engage the idolatry of the land of Israel, before essentially I begin the conquest of Israel, the first thing I do is I take the people up to the area of Shechem and make a declaration of the blessings and curses. Meaning, two choices before you, two options, two directions. Either the idolatry of the local population, in which case the curses will be the result, or loyalty to God, in which case the blessings. In other words, I can't even begin the campaign against Yericho, which is the center of Baal, or the campaign against the cities of Canaan, or the nations of Canaan. I can't begin the conquest of the country until I've set before the people the extreme positions of what the ceremony of Har Gerizim and Har Ebal represent. Two options: Torah, idolatry; Canaan, Israel. Two completely separate cultures. Gerizim representing one, Evo representing the other. The brachot on the one hand, the klalot on the other. You choose. But they move in opposite directions. And that's essentially what that whole ceremony represents. A contrast of what the conquest of Canaan is all about.
But what do you mean by the same day?
In other words, according to the Medrash, they go up to Shechem before the Battle of Ai and before the Battle of Yericho.
You can't get there in one day.
Well, that's why the Medrash says, Kama nisim nasu liyisrael b'oto hayom. That's why this Medrash begins with the declaration that this was all miraculous. They managed to get up to Shechem and back all in one day.
It wasn't just a few people.
It wasn't just a few people. That's the whole point of the Medrash. That's why it starts with this declaration of Kama nisim nasu liyisrael. Look how miraculous their entrance into the land of Israel is. They split the sea and they go up to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, and nobody stands in their way and nobody fights with them and nobody declares war against them. They go from here all the way up to Shechem and back in one day, and then start the Battle of Yericho. Historically, I'm not sure that that's what happened. Right? From a pshat point of view, I'd rather see the events in sequence. But I think what the Medrash is trying to convey is that somehow this event on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal is connected to the conquest of Canaan itself. It's essentially a way of saying that what's taking place on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal is a message to the people before they engage in the Battle of Canaan. Understand that this is a battle that's pitting against each other two completely opposing cultures. The culture of the Canaanites and the idolatry of the Canaanites, and the culture of Torah and the ethical monotheism upon which it is based. And that it's a culture war that's taking place, not just a battle of a territory. So before I begin that process, I place the Brachot HaKlalot as the paradigm of what this battle is all about. Yeah?
Were they carrying the stones with them?
Either way, they're carrying the stones with them. To take the stones, to put them on Hadidah. The midst, the Yarden. They took them out of the Yarden and took them up to Hagizim and Arim. That we talked about back in chapter 4, I think. I don't think you were here at that. That's one possibility. The other possibility, at the other end of the spectrum, The other end of the spectrum, just trying to see which order to do this in. Well, let's do the simplest possibility first. The simplest possibility is that the events are happening in sequence. They go to Yericho, forget the Medrash for a moment, assuming we take a different approach, which is that of other Mefarshim. They go to Yericho, they go to Ai, then they go to Shechem. What we suggested several weeks ago was that they really probably should have gone from Yericho to Shechem right away. But they detoured into Ai. And that detour kind of derailed the conquest of Canaan a little bit. It took them off target. So when they finished with Ai, they went back to target, and went back to Shechem to focus on the Brit, if you will, that we spoke about last week. So that according to that, I don't need to reinterpret any of the events. They're simply going from Shechem, from Yericho, to Ai, to Shechem. And the goal here was essentially because they had detoured into the conquest of Ai prematurely, they need to go back to realize that they have to set before the people the goal, the mandate, the loyalty to God, the spiritual mission, before they get too bogged down in the physical mission. Otherwise, they end up with mistakes like Ai. So that's probably the simplest possibility. There's a third possibility. And the third possibility is what I really wanted to spend a little bit of time discussing today, because I think in many ways it's the most intriguing. There is an opinion in the Medrash, and it appears in some of the Mefarshim, like the Radak, that the story of Shechem is somehow related to the second time they find themselves in Shechem. In Sefer Yeshua, they find themselves in Shechem twice. Once here, and the other time I showed you is the very end of the book, chapter 24. They go back to Shechem, and there Yeshua engages the people, and he says to them, I'll give you a choice. Remember that dialogue? He says, I'll give you a choice. You can either remain loyal to God, or you can go back to the idolatry of your forefathers. I and my family, we're going to be loyal to God. You can do what you want. Which b'chlal is a very strange choice to give the people. Why would you even give them that option? But the Medrash suggests that therefore the entire Brit at Hagrizim and Arevel doesn't take place here chronologically after Ai, but is taking place at the end of the 14 years after the conquest and the settlement of Canaan. After it's all done, then they go to Shechem and they have the ceremony. Regardless of the chronology, the question that I really want to address is why Shechem and why this ceremony altogether? What is it about the city? What is it about the area? What is it about this ceremony that, let's assume for the moment I take this third opinion, that at the end of the 14 years after they've lived in the land of Israel, they conquered the land, they've settled the land, they go up to Shechem and now they give them a choice? Yay, nay. What is taking place? Why Dafka in Shechem? So what I want to do today is take you on a little bit of a journey into the story of Shechem. Why the city? Why this area? What is unique here? And that may give us a clue as to why they need to go to enact this entire ceremony in the first place.
You mean the first time or the second time? You mean the second
half? If it are two different stories, then both. If it's one story and I'm presenting two halves of it, then either way. A couple of interesting anomalies about Shechem. We are going to look at 14 years of conquest of the land of Canaan. And we're going to do it very quickly because it's described in three chapters. Right. Up until now, it's all been introduction, that the actual conquest takes place in chapters 9, 10, and 11, and then it's done. There is a summary of those three chapters, and that summary is in chapter 12. So take a quick glance for a moment in chapter 12. Mm-hmm. It's a summary paragraph. some of this we actually looked at, if you recall back to, for those, some of you were our study last year, some of this we actually discussed at the very beginning of last year's shiurim. So, be a little bit of a review. Perek Yud Bet begins, Ze'ele Malchei Ha'aretz Asher Hiku B'nei Yisrael. This is a list of all the kings in the land of Israel which B'nei Yisrael conquered. Vayirshuet Arzam Be'ever HaYarden Mizracha HaShamash. And inherited or settled the land on the east side, sorry, on the west side of the Yarden. Sorry, this is actually begins Mineva Hayarden Mizracha Shemesh. It starts with the description of that which is east of the Yarden, Minachal Arnon Adhar Hermon, from the Arnon to the Hermon, that's the east side of the Yarden. Skip to the next paragraph, Pasuk Zayin. Ve'ele Malchei Haaretz Asher Hikah Yehoshua Uvnei Yisrael Be'ever Hayarden Yam. And this is the list of kings, the list of nations that Yehoshua and the people conquered on the west side. So the first paragraph deals with the conquest of Moshe on the east side. The second paragraph deals with the conquest of Yehoshua on the west side. Everybody with me? And gives you the borders and all the different regions. Har Shvela, Reva, Asher, all the nations that Yeshua conquers. And it lists the cities. It lists them. Remember that they're city-states. So every city is a separate identity, has a separate army, has a separate government. They are all based on seven ethnic groups or nations. And this is a list of all the cities that Yehoshua conquers. You with me? I'm going to read the list. And the structure is very simple. Melech Yericho, Echad. Melech Yericho, one. Melech Ha'ai, Echad. So it lists them. Today we would count them, 1, 2, 3, 4. Tanakh lists them as 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. You can add it up yourself. But here is the list of the kings, or the list of the cities. Yericho, Ai, Yerushalayim. You see what I'm doing? I'm going down the list. Yericho, Ai, Yerushalayim, Chevron, Yarmut, Lachish, Eglon, Gezer, Dvir, Geder, Chorma, Arad, Livna, Adulam, Makeda, Beit El, Tapuach, Chefer, Afek, Lasharon, Madon, Chatzor, Shimron, Achshaf, Ta'anach, Megiddo, Kedesh, Yokneam, LaKarmel, Dod, Dor, Lenafat, Dor, Melech Goyim, LeGilgal, Melech Tirza, Kol Melachim, 31
kings.
What's interesting about this list? Who's missing? Shechem's not on the list. Which is odd. Because right, it's a local Canaanite city. We come into the land of Israel. It's a major center. Remember, Shechem is the first place that Abraham comes to when he comes down to the land of Israel. It's a major center. It's a major city. And we're in Shechem. We're in Shechem twice. We're in Shechem in Perek Chet. We're in Shechem in Perek Chav Dalet. We certainly got to Shechem. And of all of the cities listed, all the cities in the area, Shamir, Ta'anach and Megiddo, all of the cities in the Shemon, in the south, in the Galil, they're all there. Shechem's missing from the list.
Only
Shechem of the cities mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua, or the major cities. Question.
Why?
Why is Shechem missing from the list? And Dafka Shechem, which is the place to which Bnei Yisrael go as they enter the land of Israel for a major ceremony, Hagrizim and Harevo, Brachot, Klalot, there's significant things happening in Shechem. That's question one. So now, I'm going to take you into the world of genealogy. Let's go to Divrei Hayamim. Thank you. whose tribal territory is Shechem in, by the way? Whose tribal territory is Shechem in? You can either see it on this map, or if you have the map, the copy of this. And what tribal territory does Shechem belong? Forget the Vayamim for a minute. Let's just take a look at the map. In whose tribal territory is the city of Shechem? Do you have a copy of this map?
Yisachar?
Menasheh. Yisachar's north. Shechem is the city of Menasheh. Yosef is buried in Shechem. Mm-hmm. Right, Kevri Yosef? Mm-hmm. Yosef is buried in Shechem. Yosef obviously has to be buried in the tribal territory of one of his two children. So it's either Ephraim or Menasheh. And Ephraim is further south. Right, and therefore it's in the... It's Menasheh. It's the center of the Shomron. It's the tribal territory of Menasheh. So Menasheh is an interesting story because Menasheh is split into two parts. How does Menasheh get split? Right, Menasheh is here, Menasheh is here. How is Menasheh split?
You told us.
I told you. I don't have to tell you anything. Menasheh is split because the Torah tells me that Menasheh is split. Why is Menasheh split? Half is here with the Reuven and Gad on the other side. Remember the story of Reuven and Gad? They come to Moshe, they say, we want to stay on the eastern side of the Jordan, and God and Moshe says, what are you talking about? And that's it. You remember that story, right? From Parshat Matot. So that's the story of Menasheh. Menasheh gets split into the two sides. The eastern side of the land, the area is called the Gilad. Everything north of the Yabok River is the area of the Gilad, and north of that is the Bashan. The terminology that we should be familiar with, right? The Yarmouk River is here. Everything north here is the Bashan, today known as the Golan Heights. Here's Harmon. Here's the Golan Heights. Everything in the area here between the Yabok and the Yarmouk is called the Gilad. You with me? It's called the Gilad. And south of the Yabok River, between the Yabok and the Arnon, this area here is what was originally called the land of Sichon, conquered by Moshe and given to the tribal territories of Reuven and Gad. You with me? Okay. So here's an interesting question. Before I get to Divrei Hayamim, here's an interesting question by in and of itself. Moshe conquers essentially two major territories. Territory number one is the area between the Arnon and the Yabok, known as the territory of Reuven of Sichon. And he gives that territory to Reuven and Gad. So two tribes come in here between the Arnon River and the Yabok. There's space there for two tribes, right? It's not much larger or smaller than any other tribal territory given to any of the tribes in the east, on the west side of the Jordan. They'll share the land between the Yabok and the Arnon. Then I have one half a tribe left, namely half of Menasheh. To half of Menasheh, I give the area north of the Yabok, a territory conquered from the king by the name of Og Melech HaBashan. So half of Menasheh is given the area of north of the Yabok River, which is the northern part of the Gilad, up through an area here called Chavot Ya'ir, up through the Bashan, and into Har Hermon. So, here's an interesting question. Reuven and Gad share that much territory, and half of Menasheh gets
a lot.
Triple the territory.
You like them better.
It's a bit weird, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit odd. And that's only half of Menasheh. The other mystery...
We would call it
disproportion. All right, disproportionate distribution. All right. The other mystery is what's Menasheh doing there altogether? The dialogue, and I'll show you this in a moment, the dialogue between Moshe and the tribes is a dialogue between Moshe and Reuven and Gad. Reuven and Gad come to Moshe and say, we want to stay on the other side of the Yarden. The half of Menasheh's story doesn't get thrown into until the very end. He gives Reuven and Gad the tribal territory of Sichon, and then he gave half of Menasheh, the tribal territory of Og. I'll show you the text in a moment, but you know what? Let's do that first since we're there. Just hold your finger in the place. See, just do this. Just do this.
I knew you were going to.
I kept it like that.
Just do that. You know, hold it there and jump to Bamidbar Lamed Bet. You know my theory. My theory is the more you jump around in Tanakh, the more familiar you are with Tanakh.
Or the more confused
you get. One or the other. Perek Lamed Bet. Beginning of Perek Lamed Bet. Now, as I go through this, there's a map here. So if you take a look, actually there's two maps. The first map that I've given you is the tribal territory of Menashe and Ephraim. Right, that's the tribe. There you can see clearly that Shechem is in the city of, is in the area of Menashe. And skip the genealogy chart, and in the back you'll find two maps. Each one has a lot of cities. Okay. All right. So let's take a quick look. Bamidbar Lamed Bet. Umikne Rav haya livnei Reuven v'livnei Gad atzum ma'od. Reuven and Gad have a lot of land, and have a lot of cattle. And vayiru et eretz ya'azer v'et eretz Gilad v'nei makom mikne makom mikne. And they saw the land that they had just taken from Sichon, the area around Ya'azer, which, if you look in the map, is right smack in the middle of this area here, between the Abok and the Arnon, and it's grazing land. Now they list the cities. Atarot, v'divon, v'azer, v'nimra, v'cheshbon, v'el ale, usvam, unevo, uvaon. Ha'aretz asher hikah Hashem lifnei adat Yisrael, eretz miknehi ulavadecha mikneh. This land is great for our cattle, we want to stay here. But they list all the cities. What are the names of the cities? If you look at the map, you'll find them. They're all there. Atarot, Divon, Ya'azer, Nimra, Cheshbon, El Ale, Svam, Nevo, Uva'on. So Nevon, you can see, is right. But if you look at the...
This is a map.
Oh, I'm on the map.
This is a map.
I said skip the genealogy and go to the map.
It says at the top.
It said Nevo, Ramad.
Yeah. Right, I'm not making this up. You can see in large print, in bold print, where it says Rabat Bnei Amon.
Yes.
So to the left of it, you have Ya'azer. South of it, you have El Aleh. Mm-hmm. Southwest of that, Cheshbon. Southwest of that, Nevon. Go down to south of that, Atarot. Southeast of Atarot, Divon, mm-hmm. Aroer. Do you see all the cities?
Yes.
Okay, so essentially that's list, those are the list of the cities that Reuven and Gad are asking for. They are all located between the Arnon and the Yabok.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of fertile land?
Because that's where they were. They were sitting...
Well, but they make a point of saying that they had a lot of cattle.
Right, so it's fertile land, they have a lot of cattle, and that's what they want. Yeah. That story is well known. We're not going to relearn that piece of it right now. I just wanted to show you the dialogue for a moment. And Moshe responds to them. Who's Moshe talking to? Up until this point. Reuben and God. Vayomru imetzanu chen beinecha yutana ta'aretz lazot la'avadecha v'la'achuza al tavidinu v'tayadeh. We want to stay here. We want this part of the land. We don't want to cross over the Yarden. Vayomru Moshe livnei God v'livnei Reuven. Says to Reuven and God, "Hachechem yavol mechama v'atem tishupo. Your brothers are going to go to war, and you're going to stay here. What kind of a business is that?" Moshe gets very angry at them. The rest of Moshe's speech I'm going to skip because he gets very angry, and it's a whole long piece, and it's not relevant to our discussion. Pasuk tetzayin. He says, no, you misunderstand. We're not going to stay here for it permanently. Stay here now. We are going to build cities and store places for our families and our cattle. But we will cross over the Arden and fight the war. We're not opting out of the military service to defend our country. We're going to go with them. And then we'll come back. We just want the territory. Pasuk Chaf, Moshe agrees. Vayomer alehem Moshe. So up until this point, who was Moshe talking to? Reuven and Gad. Still, we're halfway through this parak. We're still talking to Reuven and Gad. Pasuk Chaf, hey. Vayomer b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven el Moshe lemor. Moshe spells out the terms of the agreement and Reuven and Gad agree. Vayomer b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven el Moshe lemor avadecha yasu kasher adoni mitzaveh. We'll do exactly as you command. We will build the places for our families and then we will go chalutzim lifnei b'nei Yisrael. Pasuk Chavtet. Moshe then turns to Yehoshua and he turns to the people and he says, I'm holding them to this agreement. Vayomer Moshe alehem, im yavru b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven itchem et ha'yarden, if Reuven and Gad are willing to cross the Yarden with you, kol chalutz l'mechama lifnei Hashem v'nechbesha ha'aretz v'fnechem v'netatem lehem et eretz ha'gilad la'achuza. If they will go with you, you can give them this land as an inheritance. V'im lo yavru, but if not, then they will take land on the west with everybody else. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ve'anu b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven lemor. Reuven and Gad, a third time, agree to these terms. So far, the dialogue was with Reuven and Gad. Reuven and Gad approached Moshe. Moshe responded to Reuven and Gad. Reuven and Gad made the deal with him. Moshe made the deal with Reuven and Gad. Moshe turns to Yehoshua. Reuven and Gad, Chalutzim, your Marines, your frontline soldiers. We agree. Nowhere to be found in this parak so far, anywhere, is a reference to half of Menashe. Lamed Gimel. Vayiten lahem Moshe livnei Gad v'livnei Reuven v'lachatzi shevet Menashe ben Yosef. Moshe allocates the territory to Reuven, to Gad, the half of Menashe. Which territory? Mamlechat Sichon melech ha'emori, the territory of the king of Sichon, which we took from the Amorites, which is between the Arnon and the Yabok, which is the only land we've been talking about until now, right? Remember Reuven and Gad listed the cities? Every one of those cities is in the tribal territory between the Yabok and the Arnon and the area of Sichon. He takes the area of Sichon and he gives it to Reuven and Gad. Ve'et mamlechet Og, melech HaBashan. And then he adds to the discussion half the tribe of Menashe and the tribal territory of Og, king of Bashan, which goes from the Yabok River all the way up to the Chemo. Menashe wasn't in the dialogue, wasn't in the conversation. Why did I throw them in there? Add to that discussion. Then, further, next verse. ויבנו בני גד את דיבון ואת התרות ואת הרעה ואת התרות שופן ואת יזה ויוקבהה. They go and they, Reuven and Gad, settle all of these cities in the tribal territory of Sichon. Skip the pasuk lametet. וילכו בני מחיר בן מנשה גלעדה וילכדוה. The children of מחיר בן מנשה go to the גלעד. And they remove the Amorites who are there. Vayiten Moshe Gilad leMachir ben Menashe, and he gives the area of the Gilad to an individual by the name of Machir ben Menashe. Pasuk Yud Mem Aleph. V'Yair ben Menashe halach v'yilkod et chavotehem. Yair ben Menashe goes and he conquers an area on the northern part of the Gilad. V'yikra eten chavot Yair, And he calls the area Chavot Ya'ir, the plains of Ya'ir. Who are Machir ben Menasheh and Ya'ir ben Menasheh? Assuming that we're talking about an event that's taking place in the time of Moshe, these two individuals must be very old because they are mentioned in the end of Sefer Breshit as Yosef's grandchildren. Right. Menashe is Yosef's son. Machir ben Menashe is Yosef's grandchild. So that makes them pretty old. Right? So what's going on here? So for this, we're going to turn to Divrei Hayyamim.
That's half of the equation. That's one mystery. How did Menashe end up over here? The other part of the mystery is why we're in Shechem, and how he got to Shechem without a battle. That was the first question with which I started.
Understand the two questions? Okay. And the third question is, why do I need to reenact the Brit of Brachot and Klalot when I get to Shechem? So now let's go back to Divrei Hayyamim. And open up to Divrei Hayyamim first. Why did Moshe throw Menashe into the east side of the Yarden and give him the whole tribal territory from the Yabok up to the Chemon? How did we get to Shechem without a battle? And why is it necessary to enact this entire ceremony on Hagrizim and Arevo and repeat the Brachot V'Klalot that we just heard 2 weeks earlier, or 2 months earlier, with Moshe? Take a look at Divrei Hayyamim Aleph, Perek Zayin. As we start to read these prakim, they will be familiar to you if you were here last year at the beginning of the year. But we're going to do a quick review. Divrei Hayyamim Aleph. Remember, Divrei Hayyamim is an Aleph and Bet.
Right.
So Divrei Hayyamim Aleph, Perek Zayin. And do a couple of psukim in Perek Zayin and a couple of psukim in Perek Bet. We'll jump around a little bit, but my goal is to understand several things. Let's start from Ephraim. We'll come back to Menashe. Let's start from Ephraim. The family lineage of Shevet Ephraim, Perek Zayin Pasuk Chaf. To help us here, go back to that lineage page. It'll just be easier, right? Go back to that page of genealogy. Other side of it. There's two sides to it. Other side. There you go. One's Ephraim and one's Menashe.
Gotcha.
B'nai Ephraim. Pasuk tells me the following. Follow along inside. Perek Zayin Pasuk Chaf. Uvnei Ephraim. Who are the children of Ephraim? This is the lineage from Yosef, Yaakov, Yosef, the household. Bnei Ephraim. Shutelach. Uvered b'no, v'tachat b'no, v'elada b'no, v'tachat b'no, v'zavad b'no, v'shutelach b'no. Now, that's a very confusing list. Because what I don't know is if it is horizontal or vertical. Okay, is it a horizontal list or a vertical list? And if you look at the page, you'll see that there are two interpretations of this text. One has the list vertically, and the other has the list horizontally. But that part of the list is less of my interest. My interest is the last phrase here. After this list of all of the children, v'zavad b'no, v'shetalach b'no, v'ezer v'shetalach b'no, v'ezer v'elad. What's missing? The words?
B'no.
Which means that Ezer and Elad goes back to B'nai Ephraim. How, regardless of how I look at the first part of the list, whether it's sequential or horizontal, Ezer and Elad goes back to the first part of the list. That's universally agreed upon. So those are the children of Ephraim. It's either Shetelach, the first, Ezer and Elad, and then everybody else is a children of, previously listed as children of Shetelach, or Ephraim had a lot of children. Shetelach, and Bered, and Tachat, and Alada, and Tachat, and Zevad, and Shetelach. He had children with the same name. Unclear. Right. Okay. I'm interested in Ezer and Elad. Why? Remember, these are children of Ephraim. Where is Ephraim?
Geographically.
Not here. Historically, at this period of time, where is Ephraim? Where is Ephraim physically? What land is Ephraim and his children in? No. I don't mean what tribal territory B'nai Ephraim are given. I mean, when Ephraim has his two children, Ezer and Elad, where is he living? When Ephraim, Yosef's son, Ephraim, remember Ephraim and Manasseh, they're born in Yosef? Remember Yosef? Yosef's in Mitzrayim. Well, Ephraim is born to Yosef in Mitzrayim. Yosef is married to Osnat bat Potiphera, Kohen On. Yosef is viceroy of Egypt. When you, back to Sefer Bereishit. Just put ourselves chronologically back where we belong. When Ephraim has two children, where is Ephraim living?
In Mitzrayim.
In Mitzrayim, thank you. Not hard. This is not rocket science. When Ephraim,
out of context.
That's where we have to put ourselves back. Ephraim is born to Yosef in Mitzrayim. They're in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Possibly. Minimally 200 years. Right? So, clearly, Yosef's grandchildren, Ephraim and Ezer and Elad, are born to Ephraim when they're living in Mitzrayim. Thank you. That's what I want to know. Why? Because in the next phrase is critical. V'haragum anshe gat hanoladim ba'aretz. These two children, Ezer and Elad, are killed by the inhabitants of the city of Gat. Right. Gat is a city in the area known as Eretz Plishtim. It's one of the Philistine cities. So Ezer and Elad, who are born to Ephraim, in Mitzrayim, are killed by the local indigenous population of the city of Gat. Ki yardu lakachat et miknehem.
They wanted to take
the cat. Vayitabel Ephraim avihem yamim rabim. Ephraim, their father, mourned for these two children for many days. Vayevo echav lenachamo, and his brothers came to comfort him. Who were his brothers? Who are Ephraim's brothers? Menashe and Yosef's brothers and his family, right? We're back to go. This is Sefer Bereishit stuff. Right, this is the part of the story that's not in Sefer Bereishit, but it's in Divrei Hayamim. So what does he do? Vayavo el ishto, vataha vatelet ben. So he has more children. He lost two children. He has more. Vayikra et shmo bri'ah, and he names the child bri'ah ki bira'ah hayta veveto. Because there was a terrible calamity in his household. So he has a child, and he's still focused on the two children that he lost, which is understandable as a parent. So now, Ezer and Elad, and the birth of Bri'ah, and he has a daughter, Ubito She'era. He has a daughter by the name of She'era. So far, all of these are the children of Ephraim. Now listen to the next line. Vativen et Bet Chorona Tachton ve'et Elyon ve'et Uzen She'era. She builds three cities, probably as monuments to her two brothers who were killed. Those cities are Bet Choron Elyon, Bet Choron Tachton, and Uzen She'era. Where are those cities located? If you look back at the map before, at the tribal territory of Ephraim, you will find Beit Choron Elyon and Beit Choron Tachton and Uzen She'era on the southern border between Ephraim and Binyamin.
You see him? Okay. What's the problem? Right at the bottom of Ephraim. Almost the bottom of the map, right in the middle. It says Beit Choron Tachton. And next to it is Uzen She'era.
Yeah.
Okay? What's the problem?
These are three cities built by She'era as monuments to her two lost brothers, Ezer and Elad. What's the problem?
They all died in Mitzrayim. They're all living in Mitzrayim.
How did they get to? How did She'era get to Beit Choron Elyon and Beit Choron Tachton and Uzen She'era? Okay, so I leave that as an open question. How is Ephraim's grandchildren build? How is Ephraim's grandchildren building cities in the tribal territory of Ephraim? That's right.
And I'm going to give you the same answer that I gave then, and we get this.
I can remember the answer.
Right. Well, that's why we're going to do a review. I leave that as an open question. How are Ephraim's grandchildren building cities in the tribal territory of Ephraim? Now let's take a look at Menashe. Menashe's lineage is very interesting and intriguing. Go back up the Perek to Perek Zion Pasuk Yud Dalet. B'nei Menashe, Asriel Asher Yelada Pilagsh, right? He has one son by the name of Asriel, Asher Yelada, and then Pilagsho Ha'aramiya Yelda Et Machir. He has two wives. One is a Aramaic or Aramit Pilagesh, and she gives birth to... Don't get me involved with Pilagish. This is pre-Matan Torah. This is I'm not getting into the issue of Pilagish. Okay, this is pre-Matan Torah. This is the days of the Avot. They could do what they want.
Yeah.
Certainly from a... Yes. From all intents and purposes, I'm going to assume yes. Asriel, Pilagshaha Aramiya Yaldat Machir Avigilad. So he has two wives, and therefore essentially two... lineage lines, one Asriel and the other from this Pilegesh. He has a child by the name of Machir. Machir is Avi Gilad. Why is he Avi Gilad? Because he has a child by the name of Gilad. So Gilad ben Machir, Gilad is the grandson of
Menashe.
So far, are you with me? Umachir lakach isha lechupim ulushupim. Machir takes a wife. Lechupim ulushupim, the Gemara says, is the names of who these wives, this wife is, or these wives are. I'm going to skip that for a moment. V'shem achotom ma'acha. He has a sister by the name of Ma'acha. How she enters the picture, we'll see in a moment. V'shem ha'shanit Tzlofchad. There's another sibling to Gilad by the name of Tzlofchad. Tatyena l'Tzlofchad banot. Tzlofchad has daughters. Remember the story of the daughters of Tzlofchad? Okay, so now you know the lineage of the famous daughters of Tzlofchad. V'teled ma'acha eshet machir. Ma'acha, wife of Machir, has a child. V'tikrashmo peresh v'shem achiv sharesh u'benav ulam barekim. So I have a whole lineage here. U'bnei ulam bedan ele b'nei Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. It's the lineage of the children of Gilad ben Machir. V'achoto amalechet yaldat ish hod v'et aviyeze v'et machla v'ayu b'nei shmida achyan v'shechem l'likhi. So I don't really care for now who's begetting whom and who's the children of whom, but what's interesting to me are the names. I have in the lineage of Menashe's grandson, right? Menashe's son is the name of Machir.
Avi Gilad.
And amongst the various children, it's not quite clear what the lineage is, but according to the simplest explanation, Gilad has a son whose name is Shechem. And isn't it odd that the names of Machir's children and grandchildren are named after geographic locations in the tribal territory of Menashe, in the land of the Gilad and the area of Shechem? There's no phenomenon of children of Yehuda being named Chevron and Devir and Arad. And we don't have any children of Naphtali by the name of Kedesh and Chatzor. But the names of the children of Menashe are Gilad and Shechem. So what's going on? What is going on? Now I'll throw one more question into the mix before we answer. I'm going to skip the lineage of Ya'ir ben Menashe. Ya'ir ben Menashe is also from this family. I'm going to skip that for a moment. It's going to add one more question to the mix. And that's the size of the tribes. The size of the tribes. We know the tribal sizes from the census that are taken in the Midbar. Right? Parshat Bamidbar, there's a census, and in Parshat Pinchas, there's a census. The difference in Parshat Bamidbar and Parshat Pinchas is 40 years. Parshat Bamidbar, the census is in the second year after they leave Egypt. Parshat Pinchas is in year 40. So we're 40 years later. And it's an interesting exercise to compare the size of the tribes over 40 years. So I'll give you the numbers. You can follow me along inside if you want, or you can just listen and I'll give you the numbers. Let's take a look at Bamidbar. Okay? So I'm going to start with Reuven, Shimon, let's do a few of them. Levi, Yehuda, that'll be enough, and then we're going to do Menashe and Ephraim. Okay? I don't do all of them. I think you get the idea. So Reuven is Shishavi Arbaim Elef V'chameshmiot, 46,500. Shimon, Tish'a V'chamishim Elef Shloshmiot, 59,300. Levi, Chamisha V'arbim Elef Sheshmiot, 45,600. Yehuda is Arba'a V'shivim Elef, that's one of the largest tribes, V'sheshmiot. Yisachar, Zvulun, Yosef, now Ephraim. Ephraim is Arba'im Elef Chameshmiot, 40,500. And if, sorry.
That's a
40,500. And Menashe is Shnayim Ushloshim Elef Umatayim, 32,200. Okay? That's by Midbar. Now Pinchas. Okay, now it's a different sequence. I got to find them one at a time. Let's do Reuven. Ayupkudehem shlosha b'arba'im elef u'shvameot. So 43,700. Okay. Shimon. Shnayim v'esrim elef matayim. Wow.
Big change.
Big change, right?
Shimon Shnayim Ve'esrim Aleph Umatayim. Let's do, okay, Levi, unfortunately I threw Levi in there, I shouldn't have, because that wasn't Levi. One second, that was not Levi. Levi was not in the census. What did I do? Reuven, Shimon, oh, that was Gad. That was Gad. And then Yehuda, and then Menashe and Ephraim. Okay? So now I have Reuven, Shimon, now Gad. Gad is 40,500. Yehuda, 76,500. So 76,500. What's the pattern?
Most of them are going down.
Most of them are going down minimally, or up minimally. Shimon is weird. Why? Because if you remember the story of Baal Peor, remember the story of Baal Peor, Pinchas? Cosby Batzur, the Midianite, 32,000 people were killed. Rashi says all 32,000 were from the tribe of Shimon. Right, the story of Baal Peor is a separate story. They were decimated. Shevet Shimon got wiped out. So far, everybody else stays pretty much the same. With me? Mm-hmm. Now Ephraim and Menashe. Let's do Ephraim first. Ephraim, Shnaim Ushloshim Elef. Shnaim Ushloshim Elef Chameshmiot. They also went down. Went down by quite a lot, right? From 40,500 to 32,500, about 8,000, which is consistent, maybe a little bit more than the other tribes. Menashe.
He must go up.
Menashe goes to Shnayim B'chamishim Elef.
Wow, I told you.
Shmamelot. It's a big jump. That's a big jump. That's a big jump. Now, Menashe, don't forget, it's split between two halves of the Yarden. So now, one of the smallest tribes of Israel, Ephraim, and half of Menashe, let's assume for the moment, half of Menashe will be 25,000. So combined, Ephraim and half of Menashe is approximately, right, give or take, 55,000. Mm-hmm. Now, Shevet Yehuda is 76,000. Shevet Gad is 40,000. Shevet Reuven is 43,000. Which means that at this point, half of Menashe and Ephraim together are insignificantly larger than any other single tribe in Israel. Agreed? Now take a look in Sefer Yehoshua. Now we're going to come back to Yehoshua. Perek Yud Zayin. I don't have 5 minutes to put it all together. Sorry. And once all the pieces of the puzzle are on the table, it would be very easy to put it together.
Not all the time.
That's true. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet.
No.
Do you have it?
We're not
Yehoshua? Perek Yud Zayin. No. Now we're going to go to new plates and say for Yehoshua. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet. We're jumping forward a little bit in time. Yehoshua is dividing up the land. He's giving each tribal territory, he's giving the land to different tribes. Vayidabru b'nei Yosef et Yehoshua lemor. The children of Yosef come to Yehoshua. Who are the children of Yosef? were the children of Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe. But we're talking about Ephraim and Menashe here, Ephraim and the half of Menashe. And they say, Maduha netata li nachala goral echad, v'chevel echad. How come you've only given me one portion of land? Or one section? V'ani amrav, ad asher ko barchani Hashem. And I am this great multitude, I am enormous. One tribal territory isn't enough for us. We're huge. If you're so huge, if that's the case, so here, I'll give you a whole new section over here, and you can go there, and you can expand. Because clearly, I agree that you are so large that one section isn't big enough for you. If Har Ephraim is too small for you. Har Ephraim is too small for the smallest of tribes of 32,000. Ephraim is the smallest of all the tribes. Har Ephraim is too small for the smallest of all the tribes of Israel. So here's the mystery. Let me put it all together. Let's summarize one at a time. Of all of the numbers of the tribes of Israel, all of them shrink minimally. Shimon is a story unto itself. Some of them grow minimally, most of them shrink in size, with the exception of Shevet Menashe, which nearly doubles, which jumps from 32,000 to 53,000. Half of Menashe gets put on the east side of the Yarden for reasons we have yet to understand. How did Menashe end up getting thrown in with Reuben and Gad? In the meantime, the smallest tribe of Ephraim, combined with what's left of Menashe, the other half of the tribe, come to Yeshua and say, we're too large, we can't live in Har Ephraim. We can't live in Har Ephraim, in the area of Menashe, in the entire center today known as the Shomron, we're too big for that territory. On top of which, they end up in the city of Shechem without a single skirmish, and the city of Shechem is not listed on the list of 31 kings that they conquer. On top of which, I have a story of Ephraim's children being killed and cities being built in the tribal territory of Ephraim by Menashe, by Ephraim's grandchildren. I have Menashe's children being named after regions in the land of Israel called the Gilad and the city of Shechem. What's the connection between all of this? The answer, I think the answer is really staring us in the face. And that is that there are remnants of the tribes of Ephraim and Menashe in the tribal territories of Ephraim and Menashe before we left Egypt. Ephraim's children are settling the area of Shevet Ephraim when we're still in Egypt. Ephraim's children are being killed by the inhabitants of Gat. And the daughter and his daughter Sheira are building cities in the area of Ephraim and Menashe.
So they escaped.
Menashe's children didn't escape, they left. They didn't have to escape. Menashe's children are called Gilad. Menashe's children are called Shechem. Menashe's children are sitting in a territorial region that belonged to what eventually will go to the tribe of Menashe. When Reuven and Gad are given the area of Sichon, Moshe adds to them the half of Menashe, not because he decided to take the tribal territory of Og and give it to Menashe, but because the tribal territory of Og was already being settled by remnants of the tribe of Menashe from before Yetziat Mitzrayim. Why didn't who leave?
I mean, you were saying there were remnants left. From
who's the only one of the children of Yaakov who tells his children they belong in Israel? Who is the first or the only one of Yaakov's children who tells his brothers, make sure you take my bones with me when you go back to the land of Israel, right? And where are Yosef's children?
In Israel.
In Israel. Waiting.
So they left before
waiting.
The start of slavery.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Long before the start of slavery. Ephraim's children are in the city of Gat. Ephraim's daughter is building cities in the tribal territory of Gat. Menashe's children, Machir,
What Machir ben Menashe is Menashe's child. The Torah tells me that Machir conquered the area of the Gilad, and that Ya'ir ben Menashe conquers the area of Chavot Ya'ir. This area was conquered by Menashe, it was conquered by Ya'ir, not after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, not in the days of Moshe. It was conquered by Menashe, by Machir and Ya'ir in the days of Yosef. Now they're sitting and waiting. And Bnei Ephraim sitting in the area of Shechem and Hashiloh are sitting and waiting. And what happens? In March, Bnei Israel. Every other tribal territory, they march. Remember, the only other difference between Bamidbar and Pinchas, besides year 2 and year 40, is geography. In year 2, the census is taken in Midbar Sinai. In year 40, the census is taken in Avot Moab. So how come the tribal territory of Menashe jumps? How come the numbers of Shevet Menashe jump? Because they joined up with half of Shevet Menashe. So the numbers jump. Then they cross over the Yarden, and they join up with the rest of Shevet Ephraim. So the numbers jump again. And now, come back to the question with which I began. How come they have to reenact the Brachot and Klalot 3 times?
Because the others didn't hear it.
Because they weren't at Har Sinai. Because Menashe wasn't at Har Sinai when Arvot Moav and they joined up with Shevet Menashe, so they have to reenact the entire Brit because there was a group of Bnei Yisrael that weren't there. And when they cross over the Yarden, the first place to go to is Shechem, which has a link to Bnei Yaakov all the way back to the days of Shimon and Levi. They all underwent Brit Milah. Remember that? They all underwent Brit Milah, which means that they're not local indigenous Canaanites anymore. I don't know what you want to call it. Call it a conversion, don't call it a conversion, but they all underwent Brit Milah. And Shevet Ephraim is sitting there. So we walk into the land of Israel. The first place we go to is Shechem. Reconnect with an entire population that wasn't at Har Sinai. And reenact the same Brachot Klalot that we went through, the Sefer HaBrit that we all went through at Har Sinai. So that ceremony has to be enacted 3 times. Immediately after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, in Avot Moav, when we reconnect to the half of Shevet Menashe that's sitting in Chavot Ya'ir in Gilad, and again in Shechem, when we reconnect with the tribal with the remnants of the tribe of Shevet Ephraim. And that's why I believe Yehoshua, at the end of Sefer Yehoshua and Perek of Dalet, gives the people a choice. Remember I asked the question, why does he give them a choice? How can you give Bnei Israel a choice? To accept the Torah at Har Sinai, why would they have a choice not to accept it now? Mm-hmm. Unless he's not talking to Bnei Israel. Unless he's talking to all of those people that have reconnected with the tribe since Maamad Har Sinai. And who never stood at Har Sinai and said Na'aseh V'Nishma, for whom I now have to not only enact the Brachot Klalot, but I have to give them the option of the same Na'aseh V'Nishma choice that we had at Har Sinai. And if that, then when he goes to Shechem, the beginning and the end, it doesn't really matter, but I think that's the reason he goes to Shechem. That's why the Torah sets this entire ceremony in Shechem. Because it's the center of this region here, which is the region of Menashe and Ephraim. It borders between the northern piece of Ephraim and the southern piece of Menashe. And it's the center of the tribal region of that section of the land in which our cousins, if you will, were sitting and waiting for us. And explains how we got to Shechem without a skirmish, without a fight, without a single bullet. Because there weren't Canaanites in Shechem. There were Bnei Ephraim and Bnei Menashe.
So that's why it's not mentioned in the list.
Because it's not Canaanites. They didn't fight to get to Shechem. They didn't have to fight to get to Shechem. It also changes the entire dynamic. Correct. It changes the entire dynamic of the conquest of Canaan.
It's actually wild.
It's not a conquest of Canaan. It's a reconnection with the tribes that were holding on to the land of Israel for us all those years. Ephraim was there. Menashe was there.
The
Russians,
they were fighting all the other cities.
That was a conquest.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. That's actually a war of self-defense.
With the exception of Yericho, every other battle in Sefer Yeshua is a war of self-defense because we never started a single battle.
But it's sounding like today. You come in with people who are already living. People were living there.
Except that we never went to those areas. We went to Shechem and Shiloh, where B'nai Ephraim are sitting.
What about Ai and Yericho and all those
so
other?
I is an interesting question. I don't think we belonged in Ai. I actually don't think we should have gone to Ai.
Yericho is an interesting question because Yericho is the center of the idolatry of Baal. Yericho has its own issues. Remember that idolatry has its own cultural problem attached to it, moral issue attached to it. But we never settle Yericho. We never live in Yericho. We're not allowed to live in Yericho. Yericho was a battle against the idolatry. It wasn't a battle against the territory. I was a problem, but you shouldn't have gone to Ai in the first place. As for the rest of it, we'll see. Every other battle, Yeshua is sitting in Gilgal and the nations of Canaan organizing against them. But the mandate
was to come in and go to Shechem. And who's sitting in Shechem is the rest of Shevet Ephraim.
But we're told you're going to come into the land, you're going to conquer the
Yeah, that's the Rebbeinu Shlomo's Teshuvah.